Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Well, Doc, began Mark, this may be my daughter's first office visit, but I'm the one who needs help. Got any earplugs? She seems to holler all the time. Here, let me see this little beauty. Dr. Peters took the squawking baby out of Mark's arm. Hello, Melissa, he began, after a couple of minutes of gently prodding her belly, looking at her throat, and listening to her heart with a stethoscope. The pediatrician asked Mark, do you have a blanket with you? Mark retrieved a yellow one from Melissa's diaper bag and handed it to the doctor, who placed Melissa on her back on the blanket and began to fold it and wrap it snugly around her, tucking in the corners at the end. The yelping gradually got softer. Then Dr. Peters turned her over to lie on her side along his forearm and began to make loud shushing noises in her ear. Immediately, all the crying stopped, and the baby got quieter and quieter. Her eyelids began to flutter, and soon she was asleep.
If I hadn't seen it, I wouldn't have believed it, exclaimed Mark. It's a shame you guys don't make house calls these days.
The good news, Dr. Peters smiled back, is that you don't need me for this. You can do it for Melissa yourself. All you need to know are the R rules.
Great job, Doc, Mark grinned. By the way, would you have some tricks for when she hits the terrible twos? My nephew's in that stage, and whoo, maybe my brother will come to see you.
From a parent's perspective, what should we know about calming babies and toddlers? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest, an expert on happy babies and toddlers, is probably already well known to many of our listeners. Dr. Harvey Karp is an assistant professor of pediatrics at the UCLA School of Medicine, author of The Happiest Baby on the Block and The Happiest Toddler on the Block. Dr. Karp was a practicing pediatrician for 25 years. He's a nationally renowned expert in child development, children's health and the environment, and breastfeeding. He lives with his wife and daughter in California. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Karp.
Thanks, Linda. Thanks, Sandy.
Parents have been calming crying infants for generations, or at least trying to. In writing The Happiest Baby on the Block, The New Way to Calm Crying and Help Your Newborn Baby Sleep Longer, why did you feel something had to change for today's parents and caregivers?
What I've always taught my patients is that new parents have two jobs, to feed the baby successfully and to calm the baby when the baby is upset. Now, there's lots of support for parents with feeding. There are breastfeeding consultants and books and magazines and support groups. And, of course, some people give formula. The formula is readily available. But there's very little information that teaches a parent how to calm a crying baby. And I learned something when I was studying child development many years ago at UCLA, that there is a tribe in Africa where the parents could calm the crying babies down in under a minute, 95% of the time. So it was instantly apparent to me that either those babies were mutant little babies different than ours, or those parents knew something that we needed to rediscover in our culture. And so I went about discovering basically what did they do and how could we in our culture translate those techniques into practices that parents could do.
You advocate certain kinds of activities for activating a baby's calming reflex. Can you explain all this for us and explain what a baby's calming reflex is?
Sure. What I discovered was that in an odd sort of a way, babies are not really ready for the world when they're born. They're really still sort of like fetuses for the first 3 months. I call it the fourth trimester. Horses are ready to be born. They're up and running the first day of life. But our babies are really very immature by comparison. And so it turns out that when you imitate the experience they have in the uterus, the holding and the rocking and the shushing, because the sound in the uterus is 24/7, and it's louder than a vacuum cleaner. It's funny, I asked one of my patients, Valerie, her husband's name is Gus. I said, Valerie, what do you think your baby hears inside the uterus? She said, you know, I'm not sure. I think it's something like, get over here, Gus, which she heard also because you can hear voices. But mostly what you hear is this sound. What do you hear when you're born? It's silent. And people think you're supposed to be quiet, tiptoe around, the baby's sleeping. It's exactly the opposite. Rather than getting overstimulated, most of our babies are understimulated. They're missing the rhythmic, hypnotic, calming experience they had in the uterus. Now, why do those experiences work to calm babies? It does not work because the baby is nostalgic for the uterus. Babies don't go, oh, yeah, this reminds me of where I used to live. What happens is literally they're born with a reflex that is the off switch for crying. And when you imitate the baby's experience inside the uterus, it's like flipping the switch. You can calm a crying baby, even a colicky baby, in minutes or even in seconds once you get really good at it.
In The Happiest Baby on the Block, I think what's become most widely known is the five S's. Would you cover that for us a little bit?
Sure. The five S's are five ways of turning on the calming reflex. With your knee reflex, there's only one way to do it. You whack the knee, but you have to do it in the right place, and you have to do it hard enough. If you hit someone's knee and you're off by half an inch, it looks like you're doing it right, but it will not work. With the calming reflex, it's very easy to turn it on, but you have to do one of these five S's, or sometimes a lot of the five S's, correctly. They're swaddling, the side or stomach position, shushing, swinging, which is rhythmic motion, and sucking. Swaddling is the cornerstone of calming. It's the first thing you do, and you've got to do it in a big square blanket, and you've got to wrap them with their arms down, and it's got to be snug enough for them to really stay put. If they can wiggle out of it, it's going to make them cry even more. A lot of babies cry when you wrap them, and parents think, oh, my baby doesn't like it. But your baby was totally wrapped up inside the uterus. Babies don't get voting rights, you know? The wrapping is essential for the other S's to work well. But you don't want to overheat your baby, and you want to make sure your baby doesn't have loose blankets that can get around the face.
You said arms down.
Arms down, not arms up. If the arms are up, the baby will whack themselves in the face, and then they just get more upset. Matter of fact, I'll tell you, though, there's a book, The Happiest Baby on the Block, but I made a DVD as well. Because you know what? The best way, or a great way to learn these techniques, is to watch it. There are a lot of dads, you know, who really want to be able to calm their babies, but they just don't have time to read a 250-page book. The half-hour DVD shows how to do these techniques, and they're very visual and a little bit counterintuitive. So I find that parents watch the DVD actually two or three times to really get the techniques down. That way they understand, how do you put the baby on the side. Now, the back is the best position for sleeping, but the side is the best position for calming a crying baby, or the tummy.
Why is that?
When a baby is on the back, it triggers something called a Morrow reflex, which is a reflex that makes them feel like they're falling. Their arms flail out, and suddenly they get upset. So to rock a baby who's upset on their back in your arms is like trying to calm them and pinching them at the same time, because the back is not a position of feeling safe and feeling protected.
But today we put babies to sleep on their backs.
When the baby is calm, it's fine. And in fact, it's the only safe position for babies to sleep in.
Now, why is that when our kids were little, we were supposed to put them on their tummies, because that way if they spit up or something, you know, they wouldn't choke on everything.
Right.
And so why is it that the back is so much
Well, safer? What we've learned over the last 15 years or so is that babies who are on their backs, number one, don't spit up and choke on it. It doesn't happen. And number two, they have less of a chance of having crib death, or SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome. And so we know it's a much safer position for babies to sleep in on the back. But babies don't sleep as well on their backs as they do on their stomachs, unless they're swaddled. And a baby who's swaddled, and if you add white noise, and there are lots of, there are white noise machines, or there are CDs of the uterus. Actually, we on my website, we have a CD of the uterus. If you swaddle your baby and you use white noise, most babies will automatically sleep an extra 1 to 2 hours a night. The third S is shushing. Literally, shh, but you shush as loud as the baby is crying. And that imitates the sound in the uterus and turns on the calming reflex. The fourth S is swinging. And everyone knows about rocking chairs and swaying with a baby. But the more upset a baby is, it's got to be little tiny movements, fast tiny movements, like a shiver, just an inch back and forth. Now, I'm not talking about shaking. You never should shake a baby. You never should do any of these things if you're angry. Get somebody else to help you. But when the baby is upset, the more upset the baby is, the tinier and faster these little jiggly shimmy movements are. And as they calm down, you do slower, broader movements. And the last S is sucking, which is the icing on the cake. Once you calm the baby down, then the sucking gets them more and more profoundly calm. Suckling at the breast, of course, is the best way to calm babies.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on happy babies and toddlers. For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $10 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 800-250-2015. Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Harvey Karp about happy babies and toddlers.
One of the issues you treat in the book, The Happiest Baby on the Block, is tummy troubles, colic, heartburn, food allergies, indigestion, those kinds of issues. How can a parent tell what kind of tummy problem a tiny baby has and what to do?
Well, the good news is that crying is very rarely related to tummy problems. That is one of the biggest myths we have in our culture, and not just in our culture. It's a 3,000-year-old myth. The word colic itself comes from the same word as the word colon, meaning intestine, because doctors and grandmothers and everybody has always thought that babies who cry have tummy pains. And we had good reasons for thinking that. They double up, they cry after eating, they pass gas, they cry as if they're in pain. It looks like pain, but let me tell you why it can't possibly be pain for the vast majority of kids. Number one, this colic period goes away after 3 or 4 months. But they're still eating and pooping and passing gas after 3 or 4 months. Premature babies get colic. As a matter of fact, they get as much colic as full-term babies. But a weird thing happens in premature babies. A baby who's born 2 months early won't get their colic until their due date. In other words, until they're 2 months plus 2 weeks of age. And yet for those first 2 months, they're eating, they're passing gas. Why aren't they crying during that period? There was a study done where babies who were crying had their tummies x-rayed. And then an hour later, when they quieted down finally, they were x-rayed again. Which x-ray had more gas, the one where the baby was screaming or the one an hour later when the baby was sleeping quietly? It was when they were sleeping quietly. They had much more gas in their stomachs because when they were crying, they swallowed a lot of air.
Yeah.
So it's completely the opposite of what you would expect. But there are many more reasons why it can't be stomach pain. For example, babies calm down in car rides. Car rides don't do anything for severe abdominal pain. A lot of babies start crying when you hit a red light. Red lights don't make abdominal pain get worse. So there are lots of reasons why it can possibly be gas. But what parents mistake for tummy pain is something else. There's something called the gastrocolic reflex. Gastro means stomach. Colic means intestine. Doesn't mean crying in this case, but colic meaning like colon. And we all have this reflex that when you eat, the stomach fills up and it sends a message to the intestine. There's more food coming. Move out the poop. And babies poop when they're eating or shortly thereafter. Most of us, we all have the reflex, but most of the time we're not even aware of it when it's happening. But some babies are incredibly aware of it. And for them, it's an uncomfortable feeling. It makes them go, oh, there's something in my tummy. I don't like it. And in the middle of a feeding, they double up and they look like they're in pain. And in fact, doctors misdiagnose that as being acid pain. But all it is babies who are overreacting to this experience, just like they overreact to the sound of a telephone ringing.
Dr. Karp, we might be leaving some things out that we should bring up about the happiest baby.
Yeah, there are a couple of more things just that I'd love your listeners to know. First is that dads oftentimes are the best baby calmers in the family. Once we get over our sheer panic of holding a newborn baby, we wrap them a little bit tighter and we jiggle them a little bit more and shush a little bit louder. And so what's wonderful is the moms can be the feeding experts in the family and the dads can be the calming experts. And the second thing is that we've just started a program where training educators to teach baby calming classes in hospitals and clinics around the country. So there are 150 trainers now, and within a short period of time, we'll be up to 400 trainers. So parents can ask their local hospitals if classes are available to learn these techniques.
The book that followed The Happiest Baby on the Block is The Happiest Toddler on the Block. Why would you say toddlerhood is such a roller coaster ride for parents, and when does toddlerhood begin and babyhood stop?
The Happiest Baby information is based on the concept that in this weird kind of way, babies are born 3 months too soon. The toddler book is based on another kind of a weird concept, which is that toddlers are not so much little children as they are little cavemen. Mm-hmm. It's no accident that the toddler in the Flintstones was named Bam Bam. And it's kind of a joke, but it's really true. I mean, toddlers are primitive. They're uncivilized. They wipe their noses with their hands and they don't like to wait in line and they pee anywhere they want. They're really little primitives. And so that's important to understand because it changes the way we speak to them, especially when they're upset. We need to speak in a more basic and kind of a primitive Tarzan kind of a language. And these techniques begin at around 7 or 8 months, believe it or not. And the techniques are useful for kids well past toddler years, well into childhood, and even people use it with their teenagers, you know, modified a little bit.
That's interesting.
There's a lot of psychology in it, isn't there?
Yes. As a matter of fact, it's very basic psychology, which is how do you talk to somebody who's upset? And the technique, actually, there's a principle in there called the fast food rule, which means that when you talk to someone who's upset, whoever is most upset in a conversation gets to go first. In other words, whoever is hungriest for attention gets to go first. Most of the time, that's our toddlers, of course. But you'll know that when you're talking to any of your friends, if someone's really upset, you let them talk first, and then you'll get your turn next. Parents, unfortunately, we're too often wanting to solve a problem and make everything all better or distract our kids. And so we don't even listen to the whole thing that the child is saying. The child begins to say, "Mommy, Mommy, I want to go outside, but it's raining." And we're so fast to say, "No, sweetheart, no, it's raining. You'll get sick." And it's important that we teach our children. That's one of our jobs, is to teach children. But you don't want to rush into the teaching when someone's upset, because until a person settles down, they don't even want to hear your advice. They can't listen to you until they feel heard first.
What kinds of characteristics of 2 and 3-year-olds should we be aware of?
The main thing that's a characteristic of a 2 and 3-year-old is their primitive style of language, especially, like I said, when they're emotional. And so if you want to speak in words that they really understand, there are 3 steps. Short phrases, lots of repetition, and mirroring their level of feeling in the tone of voice that you use and the gestures you use. Short phrases, because they don't have a long attention span when they're upset. Lots of repetition, because even though we get blind with anger, toddlers get deaf with anger. They don't hear the first 4 or 5 things you're saying when they're really upset. After you say it 4 or 5 times, they suddenly look at you and go, "What? Are you talking to me?"
Mm-hmm.
But they're so into their, you know, their upset that they don't even hear you in the beginning. So parents who were now taught to repeat things or to say things to our children like, "Sweetheart, I know that you want that cookie before dinner, but no, we can't have cookies," which is reasonable and loving and logical, but meaningless to a Neanderthal. They'll just go over you like a steamroller. So more to the point, parents have to repeat it and say, "Cookie, cookie, you want cookie. You say cookie now. You want a cookie now." Very repetitive, kind of over the top. And the third part of toddleries is to mirror their level of feeling in the way you say the words. Because actually, when you talk to anyone, adult or child, if they're really upset, the words you say don't matter as much as the way you say the words. If you just got fired, and I'm your friend, you're telling me you just got fired, you're really sad about it, and I go, "I am so sorry, that is terrible, I feel bad for you," the words are kind of okay, but the way I said it is so flat, it makes you feel like I don't understand at all. On the other hand, if I don't use any words, and I just go, "Oh, oh, oh, Linda," you get the sense that I understand how badly you feel, even though I wasn't very eloquent. So with toddlers, the tone of voice you use is super important. So for the child who wants the cookie before dinner, it's with lots of gestures and pointing, and your face shows that you get, "Cookie, cookie, cookie, you want cookie, you say cookie now." This is like for an 18-month-old, you know, for a pretty immature child. And once they settle down and you've said it 7 times, then you get to your message. Then it's your turn. "No, no cookie, sweetheart, no cookie. We have to eat food, but come, let's play with your trains. Come on, let's play with your trains." So the distraction doesn't come until the child starts settling down.
It sounds like if you had to do this in front of anyone but your child, you might be very self-conscious, unless it was Dr. Harvey Karp you said in front of.
You have to be a bit of a ham to do this, you think. But let me tell you something. Parents do this all the time naturally. Let me ask you, would this sound weird? Your 2-year-old climbs to the top of the slide for the first time, is so proud of themselves, is beaming at you, and you say to your 2-year-old, "Hey, good job, good job, good job, yay, good job, you did it, yay." Right? That's toddlerese. Lots of repetition, short phrases, and mirroring their level of feeling. It's just that when kids get upset, we suddenly turn into these zombies. Kids don't know what happened to us. You know, suddenly we get logical and rational, and we start using too many words. And for toddlers, they're going, "What just happened to you? You became different." So in fact, parents will do this and do this all the time. It's just that we need to get more comfortable doing it when our child is upset.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on happy babies and happy toddlers.
For an audio cassette copy of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Harvey Karp about happy babies and toddlers. You mentioned fast food.
Well, the fast food rule is an idea that whoever is hungriest for attention gets to go first in a conversation. When you drive into a fast food restaurant, you say, I want a burger and fries. And the order taker doesn't say that's $4, drive up front. She always repeats the order back first. Burger and fries, you want something to drink, you want some ketchup. Once she knows she's got the order right and she knows that you know she's got it, then she gets to her agenda. That's $4, drive up front. Too often, parents get to their agenda too fast with their little kids. The child is upset and we say, you shouldn't feel that way, or be a big boy, or don't cry, I'll make it better. It's fine to want to reassure your child and to distract them. All that is fine, but you just don't do it right away. You want to narrate back 4, 5, 6 sentences so that the child really knows that you get it. They start settling down, and then it becomes your turn to teach them what you want to teach them or to distract them.
What about the behavioral thunderstorms that we all know as temper tantrums? They seem to happen at the most opportune times, like the grocery store
right, or
the doctor's office or someplace where you have to wait in line. How do we deal with those?
Well, if you use the fast food rule in toddleries when your toddler is having a temper tantrum, about 50% of the time you can stop a tantrum in seconds or 10 seconds. I mean, it's amazing how quickly kids will change. Half the time, though, it won't work, and then you'll have to do something else. One of the things I often do is have people ignore their child. After they try to acknowledge, but the toddler is still on the floor banging and they don't want to be interrupted in their tantrum, the parent says something like, I love you so much. You're so mad. You don't even want to stop right now. You're mad at me and you didn't like it because you want that cookie. So you go ahead and cry, sweetheart, and mommy will be back in a minute. And then you turn your back. So you're not an audience to the temper tantrum, because so often the longer you're there watching them, the longer they go on for it. Now, some kids, you can just pick them up and hug them because they're so upset. They really need a hug. Or you can distract them at that time after you acknowledge what's going on. But some kids, if you try to hug them when they're upset, they'll whack you in the face. And you have to turn away. And then a minute later, you come back and you narrate it back again. But more fun than stopping a temper tantrum is being able to prevent it. And in the book and the DVD, there's a DVD about toddlers as well that people can get on my website. That's the easiest place to get it. Parents learned the 4 ways of preventing temper tantrums, so that literally some parents are having to deal with 5, 6, 7 temper tantrums a day. And when you do these techniques, you can drop that down to 1 temper tantrum a day and shorten the temper tantrums from, minutes to seconds.
How do you prevent a temper tantrum?
The 4 steps for preventing temper tantrums are, number 1, preventing problem situations. In other words, if you know your child gets meltdowns when they're overhungry, overtired, cooped up in the house too long, don't let them get overhungry, overtired. That's like parenting 101. That's common sense. The second part is use good communication all day long. So do lots of this narration, lots of toddleries all day long. Do it with your other kids. Do it with your husband. So your child can see that when people are upset, this is how people talk. Acknowledging feelings respectfully. The third is something I call feeding the meter, which means that you give lots of little bits of attention all day long. If you're going to wash the dishes for 40 minutes, wash them for 20 minutes. Play with your toddler for a few minutes and then go back and finish washing the dishes. And there are lots of really fun, amazingly effective techniques like playing the boob and gossiping that are little games that you play with your kids all day long that get them wanting to be cooperative. Things I do in my office, most of the kids I examine, they will let me look in their ears. They'll open their mouths. Even 2-year-olds, they're not afraid of it because I show them so much respect through these little games that I play. when I'm examining them in the office. And the fourth thing is teaching patience. And the way we teach patience to children is kind of the opposite way that we should do it. And let me give you an example of that. You're on the telephone and your two-year-old comes up and says, "Mommy, mommy, mommy, look at this." What do we do most of the time? We say, "Sweetheart, hold on 1 second. Mommy will be with you in 1 second." The best thing to do is kind of the opposite of that. So you say to your friend on the telephone, "Hold on just 1 second." You bend down and face your child. And just as they're about to show you the thing they want to show you, you go, "Wait, wait, wait, 1 second, 1 second, one second. Just 1 second, sweetheart, 1 second." You hold your finger up and you turn back to your friend on the telephone. You say, "Okay, uh-huh. What is that?" "All right." And you finish your conversation for, 20, 30 seconds. And then you say, "Okay, I've got to get off the phone now." Meanwhile, you've got your finger up to your toddler telling them to just wait 1 second. You turn to your toddler and then you say, "Good waiting, good waiting. Now show mommy, what do you have?" So your child gets rewarded not for whining, but for waiting. And even a one-year-old can be taught to wait for 5 seconds. And then you build it up to 10 and 20 seconds and 30 seconds. And a 2- and a 3-year-old can learn to wait for a minute or two. And what they learn is that the longer they wait, they always get rewarded. And so they become much more pleasant to be around because they're not always trying to kind of yank on your, yank on your shirt and interrupt you.
Dr. Karp, in addition to your books, The Happiest Baby on the Block and The Happiest Toddler on the Block, and the DVDs with those same titles, are there any other resources you'd suggest for our listeners?
There's one wonderful resource on the internet. It's 0to3.org. And that's a group out of Washington, D.C. that has lots of great information for parents. Actually, one more is civitas.org. That's out of Chicago. Again, a terrific organization with lots of practical information for parents. And then my website, which is thehappiestbabyalloneword.com.
Well, we are so pleased you have certainly made two very happy radio show hosts, and I hope a whole lot of happy parents listening out there and a whole lot of happy babies and toddlers to come.
Thanks.
So, Dr. Harvey Karp, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Our gift for our first callers is an autographed copy of either of Dr. Karp's books or one of his DVDs of The Happiest Baby on the Block or The Happiest Toddler on the Block. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and please spell anything that's not obvious. Mention show number 265 and tell us if you can what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into.
To learn more about Parents Perspective and our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.